Okay. Now, how many of you saw the counterpart sign when you went down for a break? Did you look up to the sky? Did you not see the moon? So counterpart sign is like that moon. It is without blemish. It is shining. And so from that moment on, that means when the learned sign has changed to counterpart sign, excess development is said to be accomplished. So a person is said to gain excess concentration when the counterpart sign appears to him. So excess development is accomplished, consisting in concentration of the sense sphere. That excess concentration is kama vachara. It belongs to sense sphere consciousness, in which the obstacles have been abandoned. So at that time, the nivaranas or the hindrances are subdued. Following this, as one cultivates the counterpart sign by means of excess concentration, that means the yogi dwells on that counterpart sign again, calling to his mind the counterpart sign and practicing, saying to himself, earth, 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 and so on. One enters the first jhana of the fine material sphere. So in this way, he attains the first jhana. So first, he looks at the disc with his eyes and memorizes the disc. So when he is memorizing the disc, that sign is called preliminary sign, and his development is also preliminary development. When he is able to memorize that sign, and he can see the sign without looking at it or with his eyes closed, he is said to obtain the what sign? Learned sign or grasped sign. And at that time, the development is still preliminary development. And he continues practicing meditation on that disc. Actually, the image of that disc in his mind. Since it is the image of the disc in the mind, it is not ultimate reality, it is a concept. So he dwells on that object, and the sign develops into a counterpart sign. That means the blemishes, flaws and others begin to clear away, and so the sign remains clean, clear and bright. And when he obtains the counterpart sign, his development is said to be excess development, and at that time excess concentration also is obtained. So counterpart sign with excess concentration, preliminary sign and learned sign with preliminary development. And he continues practicing meditation on that counterpart sign, and when his concentration becomes mature, then he is said to enter into the first jhana. So that means in his mind a thought process arises, taking the counterpart sign as object. And when it becomes jhana, then it belongs to rupa vachara or fine material sphere. So if you remember the thought process of jhana, you will notice that preceding the jhana thought moment are the four sense sphere types of consciousness: preparation, excess, conformity, and then change of lineage. And then after change of lineage, there is jhana. So at that moment, he said to enter into jhana or actually gets the jhana. Since it is the first one he gets, it is called first jhana. After getting the first jhana, following this, one masters the first jhana by means of the five kinds of mastery. So after getting the first jhana, you cannot get to second jhana yet. You have to be very familiar with the first jhana. The first attainment of jhana is just one moment. This jhana consciousness arises just one moment, and then bhavanga follows. So just one moment, it is very brief. So it is not enough for you to get higher jhanas. So you have to make yourself very familiar with the first jhana. And there are five kinds of masteries you can practice on that jhana you have attained. So those five kinds of mastery are adverting, attainment, resolution, emergence, and reviewing. So these are called the five masteries. For five masteries, please turn to page 342. Of these, mastering in adverting is the ability to advert to the different jhana factors such as vitagga, vichara, etc. quickly and easily in accordance with one's wish. Now, after getting the jhana, there follows a thought process called reviewing thought process. Now, reviewing thought process takes the factors of jhana as object. So if it is the first jhana, there are five jhana factors. So on each one, there is reviewing thought process for vitagga, reviewing thought process for vichara, and so on. Before really reviewing, the mind must turn to these factors. So that turning to these factors is what is called here adversion. So that turning a yogi must be very familiar with. That means when he wants to and what he wants to, he must be able to turn to that object which are the vitagga, vichara, and so on. So that is called the adverting mastery. And then next is mastery in attainment. It is the ability to attain the different jhanas quickly and easily without many bhavangas arising in the process of their attainment. That means if a person wants to get into first jhana, he must be able to get into it quickly. If he wants to get into the second jhana, he must be able to get into it quickly, and so on. So this is mastery in attainment. The third one is mastery in resolution. Now, resolution is the ability to remain in the jhana for a length of time determined by one's prior resolution. So although it is resolution, actually it is the ability to stay in the jhana as long as one wishes. So before getting into the jhana, a person may wish or make a resolution. May I be in this jhana for 1 hour? Or may this jhana last for 1 hour or 2 hours, and so on. And at the exact time, he gets out of jhana. So the ability to stay in the jhana or to remain in the jhana for as long as one wishes is called mastery in resolution. And then mastery in emergence is the ability to emerge, to get out from the jhanas quickly and easily. So at the end of that period, he had resolved he must be able to get out of the jhana quickly, and at the time he resolved. So that is called mastery in emergence, that is getting out of jhana. So The mastery in attainment is getting into jhana. Mastery in emergence is getting out of jhana. And mastery in resolution is ability to stay in the jhana for as long as one wishes. And mastery in reviewing is the ability to review the jhana from which one has just emerged. So this reviewing and the first one, adverting, go together in one thought process. You know, if you go back to the fourth chapter and look at the diagram of the jhana thought process, you will see that it begins with bhavanga and then mind-aw, adverting, and then preliminary and so on, then jhana. So the mind-aw adverting is what is called here the mastery in adverting, and javanas in that sense sphere thought process are called reviewing. So they belong to the same thought process. So the ability to review the jhana factors from which one has just emerged is called mastery in reviewing. So a yogi must practice so that he gain these five kinds of mastery over first jhana. And besides these five masteries, the meditator is also encouraged to develop skill in extending the visualized counterpart sign by gradually increasing its size until it appears as if encompassing the entire world. So the counterpart sign, even the learned sign, can be extended in one's mind. First, it may be just the same as the Kasina disc, say about 10 inches in diameter, and then he can extend it little by little until it encompasses the whole world. So this also he has to practice. So after he has gained the five kinds of mastery over first jhana, then by striving to abandon the successive growth factors such as initial application, etc., and to arouse the successive subtle factors such as sustained application, etc., one enters the second jhana, etc. So that means there are five jhana factors. And the preceding factors are in comparison with the succeeding factors called growth. And the succeeding factors are called subtle. So in comparison with vichara, vitaka is growth and vichara is subtle. But vichara is again growth, piti is subtle. Piti is again gross, sukha, or happiness is subtle. And sukha is again gross, upekha is subtle. Now, a person who wants to get higher jhanas must eliminate these factors. First, he must find fault with these factors. It is like a person who has got a BA degree, wants to get an MA degree, and one who has an MA degree goes for PhD and so on. So after getting first jhana, suppose a person wants to get second jhana. So first he must gain mastery over the first jhana, and then he must find fault with the first jhana. If he cannot find fault with the first jhana, he cannot go beyond that. Now this is first jhana has five factors, and vitaka means thinking. Vitaka takes the mind to different objects. So vitaka is a little distracting. And it is close to mental hindrances. So what if I can eliminate the vitaka? So if there is no vitaka, there is less chance for mind to be distracted. So he finds fault with the factor vitaka, and he sees vichara as subtle. He sees vichara as peaceful. Vichara is better than vitaka, something like that. So with that desire in mind, he practices meditation. And when the jhana arises, according to his wish, that jhana is without the first factor, vitaka. So his jhana has only four factors without vitaka. So vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata. Again, he must practice to gain mastery over the second jhana. And then when he wants to get third jhana, now he must find fault with the second jhana. Second jhana is vitaka. Vitaka and vichara are friends. So when you accept vichara, vitaka may come. So it is good that vichara is also eliminated and piti is much better, much more subtle and much more peaceful. So he practiced meditation with that wish, and when the next jhana arises in him, according to his wish, that jhana is without vichara. Again, after getting the second jhana, he wants to gain third jhana, and after getting the third jhana, he wants to gain fourth, fifth, and so on. So, in order to gain the higher jhanas, he must first find fault with the lower jhanas, and he must eliminate the factors one by one. So by striving to abandon the successive gross factors such as initial application, etc., and to arouse the successive subtle factors such as sustained application, etc., one enters the second jhana, etc., in due sequence according to one's ability. So in this way, a yogi gets first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and fifth jhana. If a yogi is an intelligent person and he can eliminate vitaka and vichara at one stroke, then for him there are only four jhanas, not five. As I said before, in the discourses, almost always four jhanas are mentioned, not five. And there is one place in this discourses that indicates that there are five jhanas, but not expressly mentioned. But in Abhidhamma, both methods are mentioned, four jhana method and five jhana method. So what is the difference between four jhana method and five jhana method? That is the ability of a yogi to eliminate two factors at once and only one factor at a time. So if a yogi can eliminate only one factor at a time, for him there are five jhanas. If he can eliminate vitaka and vichara at once, then there are only four jhanas for him. So this is how a person gets jhana practicing kasina meditation. Thus, the counterpart sign is found in 22 meditation subjects, the earth, kasina, etc. But of the remaining 18 subjects, the illimitables or the limitless ones occur with the concept of beings as their object. Now, metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. When a yogi practices these four, he takes beings as object. Since beings are not ultimate reality, but concepts, they are called concepts of beings. So, most jhanas take beings as object. So this is how a yogi gets first, second, third, fourth, and fifth material jhanas. Now, the immaterial jhanas or immaterial attainments. Next, one withdraws any kasina except the space kasina and does the preliminary work by contemplating the space that remains as infinite. When a person who has obtained, let's say, five jhanas, who has obtained the five jhanas, wanted to get the first immaterial jhana, he must first enter into the fifth jhana he has obtained, and then withdraws the kasina, except the space kasina. Now there are 10 kasinas, so among them, space kasina cannot be withdrawn. So space kasina is accepted. So that yogi withdraws the kasina and does the preliminary work, that means practice meditation on that. Actually here kasina means sign, counterpart sign. So by contemplating the space that remains as infinite. Now a person gets into the fifth jhana, and let us say his fifth jhana takes the counterpart sign of earth kasina as object. So he takes the counterpart sign of earth kasina as object, and then he stops paying attention to that counterpart sign. So when he stops paying attention to that counterpart sign, that counterpart sign disappears, and in its place only space remains. Now he takes that space as the object of his meditation. There is nothing in the space. So he takes that space as object. By doing so, one enters the first immaterial attainment. So he contemplates on that space, saying to himself, infinite space, infinite space, infinite space, infinite space, and so on. And then he gets the first immaterial attainment. Then he gets the first immaterial jhana. The first immaterial jhana is base of infinite space. When one does the preliminary work by contemplating the first immaterial sphere consciousness as infinite, one enters the second immaterial attainment. After getting the first immaterial jhana, he wants to get the second immaterial jhana. In that case, he takes the first immaterial sphere consciousness as object and contemplates on it as infinite consciousness, infinite consciousness, infinite consciousness. And then he gets the second immaterial jhana. So the first immaterial jhana takes the what? Space, right? So first immaterial jhana takes the space as object, but the second immaterial jhana takes the first immaterial sphere consciousness as object. So when he gets the second immaterial jhana, there is no first immaterial jhana. So when he wants to attain the third immaterial jhana, he contemplates on the nothingness or absence of the first immaterial consciousness. So when he gets the second immaterial jhana, there is no first immaterial consciousness. The first immaterial consciousness has disappeared. It is now absent. It is now nothing. So now the yogi takes that nothingness of first immaterial sphere consciousness as object and concentrate on it or practices meditation on it, saying, there is nothing, there is nothing, there is nothing. And then he gets the third immaterial jhana. So the third immaterial jhana takes that nothingness as object, not ordinary nothingness, but nothingness of the first immaterial sphere consciousness. When He wants to get the fourth immaterial jhana. He takes the third immaterial sphere consciousness as object and contemplates on it as this is peaceful, this is sublime. This is sublime because it can take even nothingness as object. It's not easy to take nothing as object, but it is so subtle, it is so sublime that it can take the nothingness of the first immaterial sphere consciousness as object. He contemplates on that nothingness, saying to himself, this is peaceful, this is sublime, this is peaceful, this is sublime. And then he gets the fourth immaterial jhana. So this is how a yogi gets the four immaterial jhanas one after another. The explanation for attainment of jhanas is not explained here, probably because it has been explained in the first chapter. So you go back to the first chapter, pages 62 and 63, and you will find how a yogi attains the immaterial jhanas. Yes, the base of infinite space, the base of infinite consciousness, the base of nothingness, and the base of neither perception nor non-perception. So the fourth immaterial jhana and also the fourth immaterial sphere consciousness is called neither perception nor non-perception. That means the mind has become so subtle that it is almost not there. Very, very subtle mental activity remains. So it cannot be said that it is there, and it cannot be said that it is not there. So it is called neither perception nor non-perception. Perception here means not sanya only. Perception here means just mind. It is so subtle that it is almost non-existent, but still it is there, and so we cannot say it is or it is not. It is explained in Visuddhimagga by a simile. A monk and his pupil, a samanira, a novice, went on a journey. So the novice went ahead, and novice saw some water on the road. So when he saw some water on the road, he said, Bhante, there is water. Then his teacher, the monk, said, bring me the bathing robe, I want to take a bath. Then he said, Bhante, there is no water. First he said, there is water. But next he said, there is no water. Now, when he said, there is water, there is enough water to wet the feet of them. But when he said, there is no water, it means there is not enough water to take bath in. So, in the same way, the mind has become so subtle when it reaches this fourth arupa vachara consciousness that it is almost non-existent. But still it is there, and so it is called neither perception nor non-perception. So these are called the four immaterial jhanas, and a person who gets these immaterial jhanas and dies with them will be reborn as immaterial Brahmas without physical bodies, just mind there. And we might think that it would be good to be reborn as the arupa vachara Brahmas. No physical body, and so you do not have pain, you do not have diseases and so on. It would be very good. But it is called one unsuitable place, because there is only mind, there is only citta and citta-sika, and no physical body. Those that are reborn there cannot hear the teaching of the Buddha. They cannot see the Buddha because they have no eyes. They cannot hear the teaching of the Buddha because they have no ears. And so they cannot get any benefit from the Buddha and his teachings. So they are called, let's say, unsuitable places. With the other 10 meditation subjects, when one does the preliminary work by taking the virtues of the Buddha, etc., as one's object, when that sign has been thoroughly acquired, one becomes concentrated upon it by means of preliminary development, and excess concentration is also accomplished. So by practicing the recollection of the virtues of the Buddha and so on, one can reach only excess concentration or neighborhood concentration, and one cannot get jhana. I've explained this before, because they are profound things, and also one has to take many things as objects, and so the concentration cannot reach the level of absorption or jhana concentration. So only excess concentration or neighborhood concentration can be obtained through the practice of recollection of virtues of Buddha and so on. Okay, now please go to the 40 Kamathanas at a glance. It is in the book and also in the handout. In the book, it is on page 334 and 335. So on the first column are the 40 subjects of meditation, and then the other columns are temperament, development, sign, and jhanas. Atkasina is suitable for people of all temperament. And by practicing Atkasina, there is preliminary development, excess development, and absorption development. And there is preliminary sign, learned sign, and counterpart sign. And one can reach first to fifth jhana by the practice of earth kasina. So you read like this: water kasina, fire kasina, air kasina, and so on. Now, blue kasina is suitable for hateful temperament, and the others are the same. And then space kasina is suitable for all temperaments, and light kasina also suitable for all temperaments. Then foulness 10, bloated corpse, is suitable for lustful temperament. And there can be preliminary development, excess development, absorption development, preliminary sign, learned sign, and counterpart sign. But one can get only first jhana, no second, third, fourth, and fifth jhana. And the other ones: discolored, festering, dismembered, eaten, scattered, mutilated, bloody, worm-infested, skeleton. They are all suitable for lustful temperament and all developments, all signs, and they can lead to the attainment of first jhana only. And then 10 recollections. Recollection of the Buddha is suitable for faithful temperament, and there is preliminary development, excess development, but no absorption development. And preliminary sign, learned sign, but no counterpart sign. And no jhana can be obtained through the practice of recollection of the virtues of the Buddha. The same with Dhamma, Sangha, and there one is missing. So please write down after Sangha, morality, and faithful, yes, and development, the same as above, preliminary and excess, no absorption, and sign also, preliminary, learned, no counterpart sign, and no jhana. And recollection of generosity, recollection of devas are suitable for faithful temperament and so on. And recollection of peace is suitable for intellectual temperament and the others, say. You cannot get jhana by practice of recollection of peace or recollection of death. And then recollection of the body, it is suitable for lustful temperament. And there is preliminary development, excess development, and absorption development. And there can be preliminary sign, learned sign, and counterpart sign, and only first jhana can be attained. Breathing. Recollection of breathing or mindfulness of breathing meditation is suitable for deluded temperament and discursive temperament. And three developments, three signs, and first to fifth jhana. Then illimitables or limitless ones, loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. So they are suitable for hateful temperament. And the others, there are no counterpart signs for these illimitables, but they can lead to the attainment of first to fourth jhana, and equanimity can lead to fifth jhana. And then one perception, food as loathsome, it is suitable for intellectual temperament, and only two developments, two signs, and no jhana. And analysis into four elements, again, intellectual temperament, and two developments, two signs, and no jhanas. Immaterial states are suitable for all temperaments, and all three developments, three signs, and first, immaterial sphere jhana. Second, third, fourth, immaterial sphere jhana, and so on. So this is a chart to understand the 40 meditation subjects by temperament, development, sign, and jhana. Now we come to the last section in Samatha meditation, and that is direct knowledge, or in Pali, abhinya. Having emerged from the fifth jhana, taken as a basis for direct knowledge, having averted to the resolution, etc., when one does the preliminary work, one enters into the fifth fine material sphere jhana, occurring by way of direct knowledge with respect to such objects as visible forms, etc. So this is a description of how direct knowledge arises, how abhinya is attained. So in order to attain abhinya, one has to have attained the five jhanas. Actually, not only five jhanas, one has to have attained all jhanas, both material and immaterial. But he must make the fifth material jhana as a basis for his direct knowledge. So a person who has attained all eight jhanas or all nine jhanas must enter into the fifth jhana if he wants to gain abhinya. And that fifth jhana is here called a basis jhana. So it's a basis for direct knowledge. And then having adverted to the resolution, etc. So there is a kind of resolution, thought process. And when one does the preliminary work, one enters into the fifth fine material sphere jhana. So then the fifth fine material jhana arises by way of direct knowledge. So direct knowledge is actually the fifth jhana. The fifth jhana especially developed. Not the ordinary fifth jhana, but after getting all the nine jhanas, a yogi must be very familiar with the jhanas. He must be able to practice jhana, taking Adhikasena as object, Fayakasena as object, and so on. And so there are 14 ways of making himself very familiar with the jhanas. So they are mentioned in Visuddhimagga. And then he must get up from that basis jhana, and he enters into another thought process. So with that thought process, he makes some preliminary work. That means if he wants to create 100 images of himself, then he may say, let me become 100, let me become 100. And then he enters into fifth jhana again. And after that fifth jhana comes the abhinya, or direct knowledge. With the arising of that direct knowledge, now he becomes 100%. You have heard the story of Chula Pantaka. Now, he was very dull and he could not even memorize a 4-line stanza in 3 months. So his elder brother was disappointed with him. So one day, a devotee invited all monks at the monastery for lunch, and his elder brother accepted for all except his younger brother. So he was left out. So he was sorry and he was crying. So on that day, his brother and other monks went out, and he was crying. And so Buddha saw him, and Buddha asked him why he was crying, and he told the story to the Buddha. So the Buddha gave him a piece of cloth, a handkerchief or something like that, and to look at that cloth. So he took the cloth into his hands and he looked at the cloth, and maybe he is massaging the cloth or something. So the cloth became soiled because of his hand, his sweat and others. And so he saw that the cloth which was clean has now become dirty when in contact with this physical body. And so he got the sense of foulness at that time. He practiced meditation and he became an arahant. Now, a person who cannot memorize even a 4-line stanza in 3 months became an arahant just by looking at the cloth. So after he became an arahant, it was time for lunch for the Sangha, right? So the Buddha went to the house where Sangha was invited, and then the person offered food, and he wanted to dedicate his dana, say pouring water. And then Buddha said, wait, there is one monk at the monastery, go and bring him. So the man went back to the monastery to bring the monk. And at that time, the monk knew that some people are coming to take him to the monastery. And so he created 1,000 images of himself in the monastery. So when the man went to the monastery, these were not one, but 1,000 monks, some sitting, some walking, some reciting, and so on. And so they did not know what to do. So they went back to the Buddha and reported that one day we saw not one monk, but there are thousands of monks. So Buddha said, go back and then say, please, Chula Pantaka, come with us. So they went back and they talked to all the monks, please, Venerable Chula Pantaka, come with us. Then everybody said, I am Chula Pantaka, I am Chula Pantaka. So next time Buddha said, now, when this is Chula Pantaka, you just hold the hand of the one who says first. So they went back and again say, please, Chula Pantaka, come with us. And say, one of them says, I am Chulapanaka, they hold the hand of the monk, and then all other images disappeared and only he remained. So he was taken to the house and he took food. And Buddha asked him to give a Dhamma talk. And it is said that he gave a very profound Dhamma talk. Now he had become an arahant, and so all the learning came to him. So he was familiar with all the teachings of the Buddha at that time, and so he gave a Dhamma talk, maybe quoting the teachings of the Buddha. So here, Chulapanaka transforms himself into 1,000 persons, 1,000 images, by this direct knowledge. So when a person wants to get into direct knowledge, then first he must have 9 jhanas already, and then he must get into the 5th jhana as a basis for that direct knowledge, and then he must do a preliminary work saying, let me become 100, let me become 1,000, and so on. And then he enters into the 5th jhana again as the basis for his abhinya, and then that 5th jhana arises in the form of abhinya or direct knowledge. So when that abhinya arises, then what he wants to become just become. Now there are 5 of those direct knowledges mentioned here, and so the first is supernormal powers, supernormal power direct knowledge. They include the ability to display multiple forms of one's body, to appear and vanish at will, to pass through walls unhindered, to drive in and out of the earth, to walk on water, to travel through the air, to touch and stroke the sun and moon, and to exercise mastery over the body as far as the Brahma world. So this is called supernormal powers, direct knowledge. The second is divine ear. So divine ear means having the ear like the ear of devas. Now devas are said to be able to hear sounds that are too subtle for the ordinary ears, and they are able to hear sounds very far, far away. This yogi, when he has this direct knowledge, is like the devas. He can hear subtle sounds and also those that are far. And number 3 is the knowledge of others' minds. So it's the ability to read the thoughts of others and to know directly their states of mind. And number 4 is the recollection of past lives. It's the ability to know one's past births and to discover various details about these births. So what was his name, in what clan he was born, and so on. And then divine eye is a capacity for clairvoyance, which enables one to see heavenly or earthly events, both far and near, and also able to see things very, very subtle and things that are far away. Included in the divine eye is the knowledge of the passing away and rebirth of beings. I told you about a bodhisattva practicing meditation under the Bodhi tree, and during the middle part of the night he attained this direct knowledge, that is the knowledge of the passing away and rebirth of beings. This is not a separate direct knowledge because it is based on divine eye. So first a yogi or a person who has attained this gets the divine eye, and then he inclines his mind towards seeing passing away and rebirth of beings. These kinds of direct knowledge are all mundane and are dependent on mastery over the 5th jhana. So actually not only the 5th jhana, mastery over all jhanas and able to get into the jhana, get out of jhana, and also able to take different kinds of objects of jhana and so on. The text also mentioned a 6th direct knowledge. This is the knowledge of the destruction of saints. which is supramundane and arises through insight. So this is also called a direct knowledge, but it is not supernormal power or divine ear and so on, but it is the knowledge that can destroy the taints or mental defilements. Since it destructs the mental defilements, it is supramundane and arises through insight. So you practice vipassana meditation and you can get this knowledge of destruction of taints. So there are five mundane abhinyas, and the sixth one is supramundane, which is called in Pali asavakkhaya. So this is the highest stage one can reach through the practice of vipassana meditation. So you practice vipassana meditation and you can get the jhanas, and if you practice further you can get these direct knowledges. So this is the highest stage one can reach through the practice of samatha meditation. And as you see here, samatha meditation does not lead to understanding the true nature of things. It just leads to attainment of jhanas and attainment of abhinyas. So in order to understand the true nature of things, and also in order to eradicate mental defilements, one needs to practice vipassana meditation. So tomorrow we will study the vipassana meditation. In the practice of kasina, how should we treat the area outside the disc? Do we treat them as black? No, we do not take into account the area outside the disc. So we try to keep the mind only within the disc. For the counterpart sign, do we still see the edge of the sign? So you see the whole of the counterpart sign, both middle and edge. As equanimity as subject, can a meditator experience fifth jhana without first, second, third, fourth, and fourth jhana? Now these jhanas, as you see, are attained by eliminating one jhana factor after another. But when you practice equanimity, it can only be the fifth jhana because it is without somanasa. And equanimity can be practiced successfully, or that means you can get fifth jhana through the practice of equanimity only when you have attained the first four jhanas through the practice of loving kindness or compassion or sympathetic joy. When a meditator practices on five subjects, loving kindness, foulness of body parts, etc., should the subjects be contemplated in one sitting, in succession, or separate sitting, such as separate time of the day? It can be practiced in separate sittings because you cannot sit for the whole day. So you sit for some time and you may get up and do other things and then you practice it again. If a meditator uses mindfulness of breath as subject, what would be considered as sign, learning and counterpart sign? Would the sign appear? Yeah, here also signs appear. So you can read the signs in this book. So if we take anapanasati as our meditation object, what is the preliminary sign? Okay, learning sign and counterpart sign. Here the sign is always the breath as concept. Now when you practice anapana as samatha meditation, You take the breath as object, that means breath as concept. And you ignore all other objects, but just try to be mindful of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils or on the upper lip. And in order to get strong concentration, you may use counting as in one, out one, in two, out two, and so on. And when your meditation matures, you begin to see the signs. And then you concentrate on the sign, on the breath again, and until you get into jhana. So you can read about anapana meditation in Visuddhimagga. There is a very detailed instruction and explanation for the practice of mindfulness of breathing. Thoughts that arise in our minds, are they resultant vipakacheta, results of our karma, neither one nor two, and B, what influence A above? Now, thoughts that arise in our minds, thoughts mean, what do you mean by thoughts? If you mean consciousness, then all of these arise in our minds. Vipakacheta arises in our minds, and these vipakachetas are result of our karma. But the wholesome chetas and unwholesome chetas are not the result of our karma. So we see something good or something bad, and that seeing is the result of past karma. So it is a resultant vibhaga cheta. But our reaction to this object, we like it or we don't like it, that is not vibhaga, that is not predestined. That is our response to this object. So if we have what is called yoniso manasikara, wise attention, then we will not respond to it with attachment or with ill will. If we do not have the wise attention, then we may react to it with attachment or anger and so on. So kusala is influenced by wise attention, and akusala is influenced by unwise attention. And results are just results of the karma in the past. When the objective is in dana, sila, or bhavanga, can talking be motivated by kusala cheta? You mean bhavana, right? Not bhavanga. When the objective is in dana, sila, or bhavana, can talking be motivated by kusala cheta? No, talking itself, maybe it can be motivated by kusala or akusala. It depends on what you talk about and with what cheta you talk. Does an anagami still have any lobha mula cheta? Yes, anagami has not eradicated lobha altogether. So he still have lobha for rupa vajra and arupa vajra realms. Are all kinds of deity akusala kamapatha? The deity that is akusala kamapatha is described as fixed view. It's a fixed view about karma, fixed view about the world and so on. You know, karma and kamapatha, there is a difference between karma and kamapatha. It may be karma, but it may not be kamapatha. Kamapatha means reaching the full course of an action, and that is this kamapatha that gives results. Sometimes it does not amount to kamapatha, but it is still a karma. All kinds of deity akusala kamapatha. There may be some weak deity that may not be akusala kamapatha, but it is akusala, because the major deity is always akusala. Is the beauty of the world meaningless? What is its purpose? Sometimes people ask me whether I enjoy the beauty of nature. So I said, yes, I do a little. But we are trained to view things as not beautiful, as impermanent, as unstable, and so on. So immediately after being pleased with the object, this notion comes to my mind. Oh, it's going to go away in a few moments. Suppose a beautiful flower. So seeing a beautiful flower, I may enjoy the flower, but then I think of the flower as in a few hours it's going to fade away and then disappear like that. The beauty is just beauty, and now people think that it is for us to enjoy the beauty of nature. I don't know whether it is true or not. Say a flower is produced by a tree and so on, and they say it is meant to be enjoyed. I don't know whether it is true or not. But if we are attached to beauty, then that attachment is unwholesome. And this attachment to beauty may lead us to other unwholesome acts. We may steal, we may kill a person, or we may do any kind of thing. And so it is important for us, first, we are not attached to beauty. So even if we are attached to beauty, we must have control over it and not let it control us. Why is the color kasina restricted to blue, yellow, red, and white? Can other colors be used? I thought the same way. But I think these four colors are the usual colors used during the time of the Buddha. And so whenever colors are mentioned, these four colors are there. And also, I think these four colors are not difficult to get from nature. Having been to a meditation retreat, I began to learn and improve my mindfulness. However, I have some difficulty in sitting comfortably with my right leg over my left leg, cross leg posture, pain experience way before I start meditate. Thus, I change my posture with my left leg crossed while my right leg is squat, and that allow me to meditate for an hour. But once it enters into the second hour, my body tend to fall towards my left hand side, and that disturbs my progress. Please advise. I think you should do exercise. Yes, huh? So that you can sit in this posture. To do exercise little by little, I think you can sit in any posture. At one time, a woman came to our monastery and she wanted to attend the morning service. So she came and she sat in the lotus posture. And our service lasts about 45 minutes. So she sat in that posture, and then I looked back and I saw her and I asked her, how can you sit in that posture, a Westerner? You know, Westerners cannot sit even in simple cross-legged posture. So she said, I had to exercise for 1 year to be able to sit in that posture. So if you have difficulty in sitting, try to do some exercise. And also, you can practice meditation not in cross-legged posture only. Actually, you can practice in any posture so long as it does not lead to idleness. Sometimes when you are very comfortable, you become lazy and you don't want to practice and so on. So in one book it is said that you should be comfortable enough to practice, and you should be uncomfortable enough not to go to sleep. So you can sit on a chair and practice, or on a couch or whatever. When is the time when we said our mindfulness is matured? When your mind can be on the object, your mind can be with the object and not much distractions, then you have good mindfulness. Why Bible say that if you are good at meditation, mental effort, you don't need to exercise or walk, example jogging, physical effort, please comment. Mind when it is concentrated is very relaxed, itself relaxed, and I think it can also help to relax the muscles in the body. Those who are advanced in the practice of meditation can sit for hours without moving, 3-4 hours, and they do not feel any discomfort after getting out of meditation. So that means although they are sitting cross-legged for 2-4 hours at a stretch, their mind is concentrated and so it is relaxed. When mind is relaxed, the body is also relaxed. But I think use your own judgment. You may need some physical exercise to relax your body, and there is no harm in doing that. But when you are at the retreat, then we recommend that you do not do any physical exercise also, because you will be practicing meditation sitting and walking alternately, and so you get at least movements of your body about 4-5 hours a day, and so we think that is enough for your body to get exercise. What is the counterpart sign that arises from mindfulness on breathing? The breathing itself is a counterpart sign. Although the other signs may appear to you, I'll have to consult Visuddhimagga again to find the answer of this question. Okay.